Well, it's a privilege to be with you today.
Jeg er glad for at være sammen med jer i dag.
And to share with you about a topic that I so enjoy.
Og fortælle jer noget om et emne, som jeg er rigtig glad for.
A topic that I was also assigned by my friends at the Bible in Israel.
Et emne, som jeg også har undervist i på, mine kolleger har givet mig undervist i på kollegiet i Israel.
We'll ask the question, what can Israel teach the Christian believer today?
Spørgsmålet er, hvad kan Israel lære de kristne troende i de kristne i dag?
As I've traveled through the country with representatives from this lovely organization,
mens jeg har rejst rundt her i landet sammen med repræsentanter for den her organisation,
with my brother Hakon and Ole,
sammen med Hakon og Ole,
I have heard them give my introduction a number of times.
Har jeg hørt, hvordan de har præsenteret mig flere gange?
When they've listed off my academic history and things like this.
De har remset min akademiske historie op og mine eksamener.
Or when Brother Jens Kofod yesterday introduced me at the Danish Bible Institute.
Og da Jens Kofod introducerede mig på DBI den anden dag.
I was reminded of the alphabet soup that often accompanies academics.
Og så blev jeg nævnt om denne her nærmeste gryderet, som der ofte følger med.
And all the letters that go behind their names.
Og alle de her bogstaver, der bliver remset op bagefter deres navne.
But I was also reminded of what my mother once said.
Men jeg blev også mindet om det, min mor sagde engang.
That after your BA and your MA and your PhD.
At efter alle de her bogstaver, din MA, din BA, din PhD.
I hope you will get a JOB.
Så håber jeg, du får et job.
Yeah. So I've had the privilege of serving on faculty at the Moody Bible Institute for the last 16 years.
Jeg har haft det privilegium at kunne undervise på Moody Bible Institute i 16 år.
Where we want our students to know God and His Word.
Og der ønsker vi, at vores studerende skal lære Gud og Hans ord at kende.
And His plan for the world that He created.
Og en plan for den verden, som Han har skabt.
And we especially want to help them understand the role of Israel in God's broader world.
Og vi ønsker særligt, at de skal lære den rolle Israel har at kende i den hele verden.
And so we ask that question for ourselves today.
Og nu stiller vi os selv det spørgsmål her i dag.
What can Christian believers learn from Israel?
Hvad kan kristne lære af Israel?
And I have a few qualifications that allow me to speak to this subject.
Og jeg har nogle få kvalifikationer, der gør det muligt for mig at tale om det.
Whether it is my vast experience personally with the government of Israel.
Jeg har for nylig haft sådan en større oplevelse sammen med regeringen i Israel.
I was especially honored when they invited me to sit on the peace summit.
Og jeg var meget ærefuld for, at de gjorde mig inviteret mig til at være med til fredstopmødet.
And can I say even the Muslims liked me very much.
Og så muslimerne kendte mig.
I mean, this is a very warm reception.
Det var meget, meget varm modtagelse.
Although I don't know exactly what they meant by bowing like this.
Men jeg ved ikke helt, hvad de mente med de bøjede.
Since I was standing back here. And I saw this. I wasn't exactly sure what I should understand from this Arabic greeting. But over the years, I've lived there for over 25 years, off and on.
Men jeg har boet i Israel i over 25 år, sådan on and off.
And I begin to understand what some of these cultural symbols might communicate.
Og det begynder at forstå, hvad nogle af de her kulturelle symboler måske vil fortælle os.
And so we ask our question, what Israel can teach Christian believers today?
Så nu stiller vi os selv det her spørgsmål, hvad er det Israel kan lære de kristne i dag?
And it's not so different from the introduction I've had to your beautiful culture and country.
Det er ikke så forskelligt fra den introduktion, jeg har fået til jeres kultur og jeres smukke land her.
In fact, everywhere we have gone,
alle de steder, hvor vi har været,
we have asked the question, what can Denmark teach Christian believers from America today?
Der har vi spurgt os selv, hvad kan Danmark lære de kristne i Amerika i dag?
And what can Denmark teach Israeli believers today?
Og hvad kan Danmark lære de kristne i Israel i dag?
For many people, when we travel to a new land,
når mange mennesker, når de rejser til et nyt land,
we look for guides that give us direction.
Så kigger vi os omkring efter guidebøger og rejsebeskrivelser, hvor vi kan få noget at vide.
Maybe we research things on the internet or buy a book.
Måske laver vi research på internettet eller vi køber bøger.
And we attempt to get an understanding of their language and history and culture and geography.
Vi forsøger at få en forståelse af deres sprog, deres kultur, deres historie, deres geografi.
And so I'd ask you to join me on a little journey like that to Israel today.
Så nu vil jeg gerne invitere jer med på en lille tur til Israel.
I checked these books out ahead of time and I heard that Ole had been suggesting this book on the right. So I wanted to make sure it was acceptable. You never know in what new language heresies might be promoted, so I wanted to check in advance.
Jeg har tjekket de her bøger på forhånd. Jeg havde hørt om Ole, han anbefalte den ene, og jeg vil ikke stå og fremstille noget kætterskær, så jeg har tjekket dem grundigt. Man ved jo aldrig, når man kommer til det her.
Especially Americans like to spread our own heresies all around the world.
Vi amerikanere især vil gerne brede vores egne kætterier ud over verden.
I'll try to avoid that today.
Det vil jeg forsøge at undgå her i dag.
I just really want to talk about the language and the history and the culture and geography of Israel.
Jeg vil gerne tale om, især bare tale om Israels kultur, sprog, geografi og historie.
And invite you to join me on a little journey of adventure in this land.
Tag med på en lille rejse og et eventyr i det her land.
And I'd ask, why would Christians want to do that today?
Og spørg, hvorfor har kristne lyst til det i dag?
Especially Christians from kind of far away, like Denmark.
Især kristne, der kommer langt væk fra, som for eksempel fra Danmark.
Maybe it's because we, as modern readers of the Bible, are trying to understand an ancient book.
Måske vi som moderne bibellæsere forsøger at forstå en gammel bog.
A book from which we are separated by four major gaps.
En bog, som vi er adskilt fra, der er fire store kløfter, der adskiller os fra den.
There's the time or history gap.
Tid eller historie.
There is the language gap.
Og der er en kløft, der skal dannes af sprog.
The Bible was written at a time in which we didn't live.
Bibelen blev skrevet på en tid, hvor vi ikke levede.
I mean, some of you are older than others, but none of you are that old.
Selvom nogle af jer er ældre end andre, så er der ingen af jer, der er så gamle.
And the language gap. Some of our languages might look or sound a little more or less like the languages in the Bible.
Nogle af der er et sprogkløft, nogle af vores sprog lyder mere eller mindre eller langt fra.
I've been teaching for the last couple of years our Moody students who are studying in the Bible in Greece.
Ja, for de sidste par år har jeg undervist vores Moody studerende, som læser Bibel på græsk.
And the modern country of Greece speaks the Greek language that the New Testament was written in.
Og mennesker i det moderne Grækenland, de taler det græsk, som det Nye Testamente blev skrevet på.
But there are major differences between biblical New Testament Greek and modern Greek.
Men der er store forskelle mellem nytestamentlig græsk og moderne græsk.
So even those who read the Greek language and speak it fluently,
så selvom de der kan læse og tale det græske sprog flydende,
must bridge the gap between their modern world and the ancient world.
De har en kløft mellem den gamle og den nye verden, som de må have slået bro over.
We often bridge the gap of language by reading the Bible in translation.
Vi slår ofte bro over den her kløft ved at læse en oversættelse af Bibelen.
Translated into your mother tongue.
En oversættelse til ens modersmål.
So we can appreciate it readily and quickly.
Sådan at vi kan sætte større og hurtigere pris på den.
But how about the culture gaps?
Men hvad med kulturkløften?
We read about various events in the Bible and we see that people did things quite differently than we do today.
Vi læser om forskellige begivenheder i Bibelen og opdager, at mennesker gjorde ting på helt andre måder, end vi vil gøre i dag.
And perhaps at times we have no idea why they perform a certain custom.
Og måske har vi nogle gange slet ikke nogen idé om, hvorfor de gør, som de gør.
But that's why we need a guide.
Det er derfor, vi har brug for en guidebog.
To lead us through the scripture and to help us better understand the ancient customs.
Noget, der kan lede os gennem skriften og hjælpe os til bedre at forstå.
If we're going to bridge our gap of understanding,
hvis vi slår bro over de her kløfter,
then we have to address the different cultures in which we live and in which the Bible was written.
Så må vi prøve at sætte os ind i de forskellige kulturer, både der hvor vi lever og i den kultur, som Bibelen var skrevet ind i.
And then finally the geography gap.
Og så er der den kløft, som geografien danner.
And it's for this reason that many Bibles that are printed in the world today,
derfor er der mange bibler, som bliver trykt rundt omkring i verden.
They're printed with maps in the back.
At der er en kort sektion om bagsiden.
So that when places are spoken about,
så når man læser om forskellige steder,
we realize that this is not just a series of make-believe places.
Så kan vi finde ud af, at det ikke bare er noget, man har opfundet nogle steder.
They're not part of a fairy tale.
Det er ikke en del af et eventyr.
Or as I like to tell my students,
eller som jeg plejer at sige til mine studerende,
it is not that once upon a time in a land far, far away, nothing ever happened.
Det er ikke noget med en gang for længe siden i et land for langt, langt væk, der skete der ingenting.
But instead, with the Bible,
men når det handler om Bibelen,
it is once upon a time in a land that you can visit tomorrow.
Så er det, der var en gang i et land, som I kan besøge i morgen.
You can find that everything happened the way the Bible said it did.
Så vil man opdage, at alting skete, sådan som vi læser om det i Bibelen, som det står der.
The Bible is a historical book.
Det er en historisk bog, en historiebog.
The Bible is an accurate book.
og en nøjagtig bog.
The Bible is a trustworthy book.
Og Bibelen, man kan stole på Bibelen.
And so as we attempt to bridge the gaps between our modern world and the ancient world,
så når vi prøver at slå bro fra vores moderne verden til den gamle verden,
we do so in order to read the Bible better.
Så gør vi det for at kunne læse Bibelen bedre.
To read the Bible the way the ancient readers of the Bible would have first read the Bible.
For at kunne læse Bibelen på samme måde som de første læsere gjorde.
With greater awareness of its history.
Med en større kendskab til dens historie.
And its language.
Og til dens sprog.
And its culture and geography.
Og til kultur og geografi.
I like what another author did to attempt to illustrate these gaps.
Jeg kan godt lide, hvad en anden forfatter har gjort for at illustrere de her breve, det hedder kløfter.
They say that it is a hermeneutical necessity, or a necessity for Bible interpretation.
Så det er en nødvendighed for bibelfortolkning.
To try to cross the principalizing bridge between the biblical world and our world today.
At man prøver at komme over den her principielle bro mellem vores verden og den bibelske verden.
So in the biblical world,
den bibelske verden,
and in our modern world,
og i vores moderne verden,
we notice that we are separated from the biblical world.
Der lægger vi mærke til, at vi er adskilt, de to verdener er adskilt.
By culture, language, time, situation.
At kultur, sprog, tid og situation.
And even being under the new covenant.
Og det vi lever endda under forskellige pakter.
Instead of life under Israel's first covenants.
Vi lever ikke under den samme første pakt, som vi gjorde i Israels.
I've often asked my students the question, what is the difference between people in our world and people in the biblical world?
Jeg spørger tit mine studerende, hvad er forskellen mellem mennesker i vores verden og i Bibelens verden?
Unfortunately, some of my students looked at the graphic and said, our world people are naked.
Og nogen sagde desværre, at man kiggede på tegningen og sagde, i vores verden, der er folk.
I didn't notice that about the graphic myself.
Jeg havde ikke lige selv lagt mærke til på den tegning.
But by the end of the course, I hope they have better and more informed answers than that.
Men når undervisningen er færdig, så håber jeg, at de har bedre svar.
Israel is surrounded by four bodies of water.
Der er fire sådan vandområder rundt om Israel.
One is the Med, the other is Dead. One's at the head, the fourth is Red. That may not translate. If I say it in Hebrew, it also won't translate. So don't worry, it'll work.
Det kan ikke oversættes det her, men jeg vil lige give navnet på det alligevel. Middelhavet, det døde hav, Genesaret sø og det røde hav.
And these bodies of water that surround the land of Israel,
de her vandområder rundt om Israel.
We have to understand why water becomes such an important issue in the Bible.
Jamen, så forstår vi måske lidt om, hvorfor vand er så vigtigt. Noget med, når man taler så vigtigt om i Bibelen.
Only one of these is a freshwater body.
Der er kun en af de her, der er ferskvand.
The Mediterranean and the Dead Sea, as well as the Red Sea, are all salt water.
Både Middelhavet og det røde og det døde hav er saltvand.
And much of Israel today depends upon water from the Sea of Galilee.
Store dele af Israel er afhængige af vand fra Genesaret sø.
And the Sea of Galilee is filled with water from the Jordan River, which both flows into it and out of it.
Genesaret sø bliver fyldt af vand fra Jordanfloden, som både flyder ind i søen og ud af den.
And it flows from springs that flow from Mount Hermon, one of the highest mountains in the region.
Vandet kommer fra kilder heroppe ved Hermonbjerget, som er et af de højeste områder, højeste beliggende steder i området.
And its snow-covered peaks melt and provide water.
Det er sneklædte bjergtinder her, og det smelter, og det derfra kommer vand.
And there are also natural springs that flow into the Jordan River.
Der er også nogle naturlige kilder, hvorfra vandet sprøger ned i Jordanfloden.
In modern times, there is a pumping station that takes water from the north side of the Sea of Galilee and takes it all around the country.
Og nu her i en moderne tid, jamen så er der nogle pumper heroppe nord for søen, der får vandet lidt ud i hele landet.
In biblical times, the land is called by various names based upon its elevation and placement.
På bibelsk tid, der havde landet forskellige navne derav på, og alle sammen afspejlede, hvor det højt det ligger i det, højt oppe det ligger, og hvor det, hvor det var.
The rolling hills to the west of the Sea of Galilee.
Der var de her højdedrag, små bakker og små bjerge vest for Galilea.
From this body of water until the Mediterranean.
Mellem den her sø og Middelhavet.
They're called the Galilee.
Kendte Galileas.
Because they roll like the word gal in Hebrew.
Gal
is the word for waves of the sea.
Ja. Okay, det bliver kaldt ligesom de rullende bakker. Det er det samme ord på en eller anden måde som bølger.
Perhaps you noticed the similar sound to the beginning of the word Golan for the Golan Heights.
Måske lægger I mærke til Golanhøjderne. Det er næsten det er det samme lyd.
It also has the word for a wave of the sea in Hebrew, gal.
Det er også et hebraisk ord for en bølge.
As we would move south in the country, you'll notice this impression.
Og når vi går længere mod syd I landet.
This is a valley about 15 miles wide at its widest point. What is that? 30 approximately kilometers.
Om det er sådan en dal, der er sådan 25-30 km bred, der man kan ligesom se på kortet også, at det er ligesom går ned.
The valley of Jezreel was like the breadbasket of Israel.
Det her, det var Israels brødkurv, den her, der lå I Israel.
Very fertile with much possibility for agriculture.
Meget frodigt landområde, hvor man virkelig kunne dyrke landbrug.
And then you have the coastal plain.
Så er det kystområdet her.
Where in the south the Philistines lived. And later it was known for its great amount of flowers and trees in the Sharon Plain.
Og heroppe I Sharonhøj området, der var det kendt for sine blomster og sin frugt.
Coming inland from the sea.
Når man kommer fra søsiden ind.
We arrive at the Shpela or the lowlands and low hill country.
Så kommer man til et lavt bakkeområde her.
And then to the spine of Israel or backbone of the country.
Og så der ligesom en ryggrad her, der ligger I landet.
The central highlands.
Det de centrale højder.
With the hill country of Judea and the hill country of Samaria.
Hvor vi har både Judæas og Samarias bjergland.
South of this is the wilderness area, all desert.
Syd for det der det bare en stor ørken.
Though I would have placed the word Negev somewhere in this region.
Hvis jeg måtte have lavet kortet, så havde ordet Negev ligget der højere oppe.
In biblical times, the Negev was able to be farmed.
Fordi på Bibels tid, der var det muligt at dyrke landbrug I Negev.
And even today, after the work of David Ben-Gurion,
og selv I dag efter Ben-Gurion, så,
then the desert has begun to blossom again.
Der ørkenen begyndt at blomstre igen.
With that irrigation that comes pumping from the Sea of Galilee to the Negev.
Det skyldes det vand, som bliver pumpet ned fra Genesaretsøen hernede I Negev.
Also in this land, you see this great valley.
Og der også den her store dal, som vi kan se her.
The Jordan Rift Valley.
Det Jordan Rift Valley.
Which is really part of a much larger valley called the Syro-African Rift Valley.
Og det en del af en meget, meget større dal, der går langt, eller kløftområdet, der går helt ned I Afrika.
Because it comes far from off of this map in Syria.
Den først begynder heroppe I Syrien.
Goes all the way through the land of Israel and Jordan.
Går hele vejen igennem Israel og Jordan.
Comes down into the area of the Dead Sea.
Og går ned igennem det døde hav.
And it proceeds on through the Red Sea and into Africa today. I had to get up on a high ladder and use my wide-angle lens for this photo. But it was worth it to be able to show you some of the agricultural area of Israel. Perhaps you can begin to see the border with Egypt here.
Her kan vi se grænsen ind til Egypten.
And you can even see it from space.
Man kan se den ude fra rummet.
You can see it because Israel is committed to farming right up to the place of Israel's borders.
Man kan se den, fordi Israel dyrker landet helt op til grænsen.
Maybe you can understand that Israel, being such a small country, needs all of its land.
Kan vi måske forstå, at Israel, når det så lille et land, så har det brug for det hele.
And so Israel has taken this approach with its neighbors.
Så derfor Israel taget den fremgangsmåde over for sine naboer.
That they will farm right up to the border.
At de vil have landbrugsland helt hen til grænsen.
Because if we have peace, then we should have peace.
Hvis der fred, jamen, så skal vi have fred.
But if we're at war, then we'll have a war.
Hvis der lige pludselig bliver krig, jamen, så det krig, det handler om.
But we prefer to have peace.
Vi foretrækker fred.
So if we have peace.
Så når der fred.
And we agree that there is peace between us. I met this brother before the service, who's been to Israel a lot.
Yes.
Yeah. And if we have peace between us, then perhaps I can sit down close by.
For når der fred, så kan vi sidde tæt sammen.
And that is Israel's approach with its neighbors. And so they farm right up to the border.
Så det er Israels tilgang, den måde Israel opfører sig på sine naboer, så derfor går man tæt til grænsen.
And you can see that even from this satellite photo.
Og det kan man se her på satellitfotoet.
You can also see some of the farmed areas of the Negev.
Man kan også se nogle af de steder, hvor Negev-ørkenen er opdyrket.
But others are unable to be farmed at this point in time.
Men andre områder hernede er ikke muligt at opdyrke.
Except small irrigated areas.
Kun nogle små områder, som er blevet kunstvandet.
So, we notice something about the topography of Israel.
Så nu har vi lagt mærke til noget af den her topografi i Israel.
And we ask, how can this help us better understand the Bible?
Og vi kan spørge, hvordan kan det hjælpe os til bedre at forstå Bibelen?
Whether we're looking at the Transjordanian Highlands.
Hvad enten vi taler om de transjordanske højder.
Or the Jordan Rift Valley.
Eller Jordan Rift Valley.
Or the Central Ridge Route through the country.
Eller denne her centrale bjergkæde, der er igennem landet.
Or the low hills called the Shvela in Hebrew.
Eller de her lave bakker, lave bjerge.
Or onto the coastal plain.
Eller helt ud til kystlandet.
We're looking at a small land.
Vi taler om et lille bitte land.
But a land that fills the pages of your Bible.
Men et land, der fylder af alle siderne i Bibelen.
As we try to appreciate how small Israel is.
Når vi prøver ligesom at forestille os at forstå, hvor lille Israel er.
I often use this photo to suggest that this is my proof positive image that Israel is trying to take over the Muslim world.
Så bruger jeg det her billede til at vise, at det her virkelig det positive bevis på, at Israel prøver at overtage hele den muslimske verden.
Or not. But to compare it to the places where I live.
Hvis vi kan sammenligne det med det her, hvor jeg bor.
Part of the year we spend in Chicago, where Moody Bible Institute is located.
En stor del af året tilbringer vi i Chicago, hvor Moody Institute ligger.
And we have this lake called Lake Michigan.
Vi har den her sø, der hedder Lake Michigan.
And all of Israel could fit inside of Lake Michigan.
Hele Israel kunne være i Lake Michigan.
Also in the United States, you might have heard that Texas is kind of a large state.
Og jeg har måske hørt om Texas, en stor stat i USA.
And if you ever drove through Texas,
hvis I nogensinde har kørt gennem Texas,
it could be the longest 3 days you've ever driven.
Det kan være de længste 3 dage, man nogensinde har kørt.
Texas covers all of the Middle East, you could say.
Hele Mellemøsten kan være i Texas.
From the Nile River of Egypt to the Persian Gulf.
Helt fra Nilen her i Egypten og til den Persiske Golf.
But for us, we're just talking about this little piece of geography here.
Vi taler bare om det lille stykke geografi her.
And as we try to better understand any new land to which we would go,
og når vi prøver at forstå hvert nyt land bedre,
just like we are learning new things about Danish life and culture every day,
ligesom vi nu her lærer nyt om dansk liv og dansk kultur,
we're learning the difference between Christiansborg Castle and every other castle that you have.
Der er forskelle mellem de forskellige slotte, Christiansborg og de andre.
They're all beautiful and impressive.
De er alle smukke og imponerende.
But the only way we will be able to tell which photos we took.
Men den eneste måde vi kan fortælle hvilke billeder vi har taget.
Is to refer back time and time to the guidebook.
Det er ved at vende tilbage til guidebogen igen og igen.
Ah, this beautiful piece of art was not in Aarhus, it was in Copenhagen.
Ah, det her stykke kunst, det var ikke i Aarhus, det var i København.
And as you read the Bible, I think you will have the same sort of geographical confusion in your mind.
Og jeg tror, man har den samme form for geografisk forvirring i hovedet, når man læser i Bibelen.
As a newcomer to Scripture.
Når man er nybegynder, når først man begynder at læse i Bibelen.
But the more you read the Bible,
men jo mere man læser i Bibelen,
it may be like the more days we spend in Denmark.
Det er lidt ligesom jo flere dage man tilbringer i Danmark.
When we wake up in a new bed,
når man vågner op i en ny
seng, we might not know where we are.
Så jeg tror, at man ikke ved, hvor man er.
But as we wake up a little further,
men når vi bliver mere vågne,
we know what city we're in.
Så kommer vi i tanke om, hvilken by vi er.
And we remember what part of the country that is.
Og kommer i tanke om, hvilken del af landet det er.
And I hope that happens for us as we read the Bible.
Og det håber jeg også, det sker efterhånden, når vi læser i Bibelen.
And we begin to see, ah, this is where Jesus was during his Galilean ministry.
Og vi begynder at se, nej, det var der, Jesus var, mens han tjente og havde opgave med Galilea.
And how it may have taken about 3 days for them to walk to Jerusalem.
Og hvordan det har taget dem cirka 3 dage at gå til Jerusalem.
Well, not only do you learn about geography in a new place,
men lærer ikke bare om geografien, når man er et nyt sted.
You might also learn about their culture through their holidays.
Man kan også lære noget om deres kultur gennem deres fester.
Newcomers to the United States.
Nogen der kommer til USA for første gang.
Might be impressed with the amount of fireworks we have on the 4th of July.
Bliver måske imponeret af alt det der fyrværkeri vi har 4. juli.
And they might be disappointed by the amount of commercialism we have associated with Christmas.
Og det kan være, de bliver skuffet over den meget kommercielle ting, der er omkring i forbindelse med julen.
With the sales that start earlier and earlier every year.
Og hvor udsalgen og altså, det starter tidligere og tidligere hvert eneste år.
But whatever the new country and whatever the culture,
men ligegyldigt hvilket land det er og hvilken kultur vi taler om,
you can learn something about their values by what they officially celebrate.
Så kan vi lære om deres værdier gennem det, som de officielt fejrer.
And the holidays that are listed on the calendar.
Og de højtider, som er nævnt på deres kalender.
In Israel, the months begin in the springtime.
I Israel, der begynder året om foråret.
With a month called the month of Nisan, or sometimes called Aviv.
Med en måned, som hedder Nisan, eller nogle gange Aviv.
And they continue around the year.
Og de fortsætter sig rundt om året.
Just like our months might do.
Ligesom vores måneder gør.
From the spring to the summer.
Fra forår til sommer.
And summer to the fall.
Sommer til efterår.
And fall to the winter.
Efterår til vinter.
And winter back to the spring.
Og så tilbage til forår igen.
And God gave Israel its calendar.
Gud gav Israel den kalender.
And we can read about it in Leviticus chapter 23 in the Bible.
Og vi kan læse om det i 3. Mosebog 23.
And I like to call this chapter the feast chapter of the Bible. Because it lists all of these appointed feasts in order. They are listed the way they appear in the Bible. And the Bible lists the way they are found on the calendar. Some people complain that as they tried to read through the book of Leviticus, through the Bible,
nogle mennesker, de klager over, når de skal læse igennem Bibelen.
They become slowed down when they reach the book of Leviticus with all of its feasts and offerings.
Så går tempoet meget ned, så de går i stå, når de kommer til 3. Mosebog med alle festerne og alle ofrene.
And they suggest that since we don't have a tabernacle or a temple today, all of these offerings seem so irrelevant.
Og de synes, alle de her ofre, de ting, de altså irrelevante, når vi nu ikke har noget tabernakel mere.
But I would encourage you, try starting Leviticus perhaps in chapter 23.
Men jeg vil opmuntre jer til at starte med 3. Mosebog, kapitel 23.
And to begin to realize how important it is to understand a culture in light of its holidays.
Så begynder man måske forstå, hvor vigtigt det er at forstå en kultur ud fra dens højtider.
The first holiday that is listed in the calendar in Leviticus 23.
Den første højtid, der er nævnt her i 3. Mosebog 23.
Is the Feast of Passover.
Det er påsken.
It begins, on the 14th day of the first month.
Den begynder den 14. dag i den første måned.
And for that matter, before you have the Passover listed in the first verses of Leviticus 23,
før vi har det her om påsken, der nævner vi det første, der læser vi det andet i de første vers,
you find a holiday that is so important it comes around every week.
Der møder vi en højtid, der er så vigtig, at vi har den hver eneste uge.
It's the seventh day of the week. Or the Sabbath.
Sabbaten.
And this word Sabbath comes from the root word for the number seven. The word in Hebrew goes something like this. Sheva, which is seven. Shabbat, which is the Sabbath. Shabbat for the Sabbath. Mm-hmm. Shavua, which is 1 week of 7 days.
Shavua, der betyder en uge med syv på syv dage.
Shevaim for the number 70.
Shevaim betyder 70.
Or Shavuot for weeks, plural.
Shavuot for uger, det er flertalsord.
So you can hear it's all based on the number Sheva or seven.
Vi kan høre, at alle ordene de kommer ud af syv.
And many of these feasts in Leviticus 23 are based upon the number 7.
Og mange af de her højtider, vi læser om i 3. Mosebog 23, de kommer fra 7.
The Passover is the first one that is listed.
Påsken er den første, vi hører om.
And at this season, they begin to eat unleavened bread for 7 days.
Og denne fest, den begynder de med at spise usyret brød i 7 dage.
On the day after the Sabbath, during the week of Passover,
dagen efter sabbat i påskeugen,
the first fruits from the harvest are brought to the priest.
Der bliver de første frugt, de første brødene fra høsten bliver bragt til templet.
And the priest takes a bundle of grain from the offerer.
Og præsten, han tager nogle strå fra offeret.
And he waves the sheaf so that the offering will be accepted.
Og han svinger dusken frem og tilbage, så at offeret bliver modtaget.
This is the feast of first fruits.
Det er første brødet.
And on that day of first fruits,
og på den her dag, det første,
the Israelites were commanded to be counting for 7 weeks.
Og så fik israelitterne vide, at de skulle tælle 7 uger frem.
Now I wonder if I have any accountants among us who can tell me how many days is 7 weeks.
Jeg ved ikke, om der er nogle regnskabsfolk her, der kan fortælle mig, hvor mange dage er 7.
But it sounds something like 49 days.
Nu er retten 49.
That's how math seems to work in both of our cultures. On the next day, after the 49 days have been counted,
dagen efter de 49 dage,
there's a big party.
Der er en stor fest.
A celebration for the 50th day called Pentecost.
For den 50. dag, der bliver kaldt Pentecosten.
And the 50th day is important because it comes at the end of a 7-week period.
Det er en vigtig dag, fordi den afslutter en 7-ugers periode.
Further, we have a period after this in the summer season when various crops, other crops are growing.
Og efter det, så har vi en anden sommerperiode her, hvor man dyrker forskellige andre afgrøder.
And at the end of the season of the harvest, in the fall,
og med afslutningen af den her høstperiode i efteråret,
sometime September or December,
September eller
October. Then you have the biblical month of Tishrei.
Der har vi den bibelske måned, der bliver kaldt Tishrei.
In which trumpets are blown.
Hvor man støder i trompeter.
To announce a special celebration.
Fordi man vil bekendtgøre en helt særlig højtid.
And many celebrate it as the Jewish New Year.
Og mange de fejrer den som det jødiske nytår.
Now we already had the beginning of the year in the spring.
Men året begyndte jo i foråret.
And that's the civil New Year.
Det er det civile nytår.
But in the fall you have the religious New Year.
Om efteråret, der har vi det religiøse nytår.
And for 10 days after blowing the trumpets,
og i 10 dage efter man har stødt i trompeterne her,
people become very concerned about their religious life.
I de 10 dage, der er alle mennesker meget optaget af deres religiøse liv.
Because in 10 days the Day of Atonement will arrive.
Fordi 10 dage efter, der har vi den store forsoningsdag.
A day in which only one man,
den dag, hvor kun ét menneske,
could enter one place,
kunne gå ét sted hen,
with one purpose,
med ét formål,
and that was to make atonement for the nation.
Og det var for at skaffe forsoning til folk.
He was the high priest,
det var øverste præsten,
who entered the holy of holies,
som gik ind i det allerhelligste,
to make atonement first for his own sin,
for at skaffe forsoning først for sine egne synder,
but ultimately for the sin of the nation.
Og derefter for folkets synder.
And so this is the Day of Atonement.
Så det er forsoningsdagen.
Soon after this was the Feast of Tabernacles.
Kort tid efter det, der har vi løvhyttefesten.
Which lasts for guess how long?
Gæt hvor lang tid den var?
7 days. Another 7-day period.
En ny 7-dagsperiode.
And this brings us to the solemn assembly or great day of celebration at the end of the 7-day period.
Og det fører os ned til den store og højtidsdag, festdag, der afslutter perioden.
And so this is the calendar of Israel.
Det er Israels kalender.
With 7 festivals.
Med 7 fester.
With Passover.
Med påske.
Unleavened bread.
Usyret brød.
First fruits.
Den første høstfest.
Pentecost.
Pinse.
The Feast of Trumpets.
Trompet.
The Day of Atonement.
Forsoningsdagen.
And the Feast of Tabernacles.
Og løvhyttefesten.
Which is also known as the ingathering, the final collection of the crops.
Det er den der, hvor hele høsten bliver afsluttet.
During the time of tabernacles, people live in booths or outdoor structures for a period of 7 days.
Og det her mennesker, de lever i løvehytter, udendørs små hytter, de har bygget i 7 dage.
And God used this calendar of Israel to prepare the Israelites for the coming of the Messiah.
Gud, han brugte den her kalender til at forberede folket på Messias' komme.
I think it's a tremendously helpful study.
Jeg synes, det er et virkelig hjælp, Man får virkelig hjælp at studere det her.
To look up every reference to these Old Testament holidays.
Og så referencerne op, så henvisningerne op til de her fester i Gamle Testamentet.
And how you find them mentioned in the New Testament.
Og hvordan vi så også læser om dem og finder dem i det nye testamente.
Right away in the New Testament, you have Jesus introduced by John the Baptist.
Jesus, han blev præsenteret af Johannes Døberen lige i begyndelsen af Nye Testamentet.
Behold the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world.
Se det Guds lam, som bærer verdens synd.
And the Apostle Paul refers to Jesus in 1 Corinthians chapter 5.
Og i 1. Korinther 5, der henviser apostlen Paulus til Jesus.
When he says, Christ, our Passover has already been sacrificed for us.
Og siger, at vores påskelam er allerede blevet offret for os.
And since he has already been offered as our Passover lamb,
og eftersom vores påskelam allerede er blevet offret,
then we should have already removed the leaven from our homes.
Så har vi allerede fjernet det, alt det, det syrede brød fra vores hjem.
Further, in 1 Corinthians chapter 15,
og i 1. Korinther 15,
Paul refers to Jesus as the first fruits of the resurrection.
Jamen, der henviser Paulus til Jesus som første brøden, som det første høst.
Perhaps you'll remember that I said the high priest was to wave the sheaf of the offering.
I husker måske, at jeg sagde, at ypperste præsten, han skulle vifte med de her næg.
So that the offerer would be accepted.
Sådan at offeret bliver accepteret.
That's what's written in Leviticus 23.
Det læser vi i 3. Mosebog 23.
But do you realize also, if Christ our Passover had not been raised,
men hvis ikke Jesus ved påsken var blevet ophævet op,
we also would not be accepted.
Så ville vi heller ikke blive accepteret.
And so these festivals are mentioned in the New Testament as well.
Så de her fester er altså også nævnt i Nye Testamentet.
And perhaps some are so unfamiliar and new to the Bible,
måske er der nogen her, der er så nye og ukendte,
that when they hear of the Feast of Pentecost,
at når de hører om festen ved Pinse,
they only associate it with the events of Acts chapter 2.
Så kommer de kun til at tænke på det, der skete i Apostlenes Gerninger 2.
And they have no understanding that the day of Pentecost was celebrated with the Jewish people for more than 1,000 years before Acts chapter 2.
Og de er ikke klar over, at jøderne havde fejret pinsen i mere end 1,000 år før Apostlenes Gerninger.
And Pentecost, or the Feast of Weeks,
eller, men ugefesten her,
is still celebrated within the Jewish community today.
Den bliver stadigvæk fejret blandt jøder i dag.
What we read in Leviticus 23 is that on the day of Pentecost, or the Feast of Weeks,
vi læser i 3. Mosebog 23, at på ugefesten,
the Israelites were to make a proclamation.
Der skulle israeliterne lave en stor proklamation.
And announce something related to their relationship with God.
De skulle udråbe noget, der havde med deres forhold til Gud at gøre.
Leviticus 23 commands them to make a proclamation.
De får simpelthen bud ordre på her, eller bud om.
After counting 50 days.
Efter de havde talt 50 dage.
This is found in verses 15 through 22 for those who are looking it up.
3. Mosebog 23, 15-22.
And on the day of Pentecost in Acts chapter 2.
Og i Apostlenes Gerninger 2 på pinsedagen.
This is what Peter did.
Det var det, som Peter, han gjorde.
He made a proclamation.
Han lavede en proklamation.
And perhaps this is why people stopped to listen to him.
Og måske var det derfor, at mennesker standsede for at lytte til ham.
Because it was not culturally abnormal for someone to make a proclamation on the day of Pentecost.
For det var ikke unormalt i kulturen der, at nogen stillede sig op og havde sådan noget at sige på pinsedagen.
Various people were taking their turns to make a proclamation at the temple on this day.
Mange mennesker sådan på skift, de stillede sig op i templet og holdt en tale, en proklamation der.
And Peter made his proclamation on this day.
Og Peter holdt sin proklamation der.
In 1 Thessalonians, Paul also speaks about the trumpet of the Lord.
I 1. Thessalonians brev hører vi om, at Paulus taler om trompeter.
And he said, this is what we're waiting to hear.
Det er vi venter på at høre.
That Jesus is coming again for his people.
Når Jesus kommer igen til sit folk.
And we're waiting for the sound of his trumpet to announce his coming.
Og vi venter på at høre den trompet, personen, der annoncerer, at han kommer.
And when he comes, people will be evaluated before the throne of God.
Og når han kommer, så skal folk dømmes foran Guds trone.
Have they accepted his atoning work?
Har de taget imod hans forsoning?
Or are they still separated from God by their sin?
Eller adskiller deres synd dem stadigvæk fra Gud?
And we also are reminded of the Feast of Tabernacles in the Bible.
Og vi bliver også mindet om Løvehyttefesten her.
Where in Revelation chapter 21,
i Åbenbaring 21,
we read that one day God will come with the new Jerusalem and dwell among his people.
der læser vi, hvordan Gud skal komme ned med det nye Jerusalem og skal bo hos sit folk.
The word translated to dwell among his people is the same word for tabernacle among his people in the Bible. And so perhaps Israel's calendar is also helpful for us to understand our future calendars.
Så måske vil Israels kalender også hjælpe os til bedre at forstå kalenderen for os i fremtiden.
And our past calendar.
Og også det, der skete for os i fortiden.
Namely, that Jesus died for our sins as the Passover lamb.
At Jesus døde for os som for vores synder som påskelam.
He is unleavened and without sin.
Han er uden synd og uden synd.
And thus, as we celebrate the Lord's table, we use unleavened bread to remind us of the sinlessness of the body of Jesus.
Så derfor bruger vi også ustyret brød ved nadveren, for at skal minde os om, at Jesus var uden synd.
He was the first fruits of the resurrection.
Han var første brødet af opstandelsen.
And did you catch this in the book of Acts, where it was mentioned 40 days after the resurrection, Jesus ascended into heaven?
Jeg mærkte til, at i åbenbaringsbogen står 40 dage efter opstandelsen, der steg for Jesus til himlen.
How would they know it was 40 days after the resurrection?
Hvordan ville de vide, at det var 40 dage efter?
Do you remember what the Israelites were to do beginning on the day of first fruits?
Kan I huske, hvad det var, israelitterne skulle gøre, som den dag, hvor det begyndte?
They were commanded to count for 7 weeks.
De skulle tælle 7 uger frem.
And so each week they would be counting. Now 7 days. Now 14 days.
Så hver uge ville de tælle, så nu 7.
21, 28. Yeah? And as they were counting, during this time period, Jesus was appearing to numerous individuals risen from the dead.
Og mens de talte her, så kom Jesus flere gange og viste sig for dem.
And this is why they would know that it's the 40th day after the resurrection.
Derfor vidste de, at det var den 40. dag efter opstandelsen.
Because he rose from the dead as the first fruits of the resurrection.
Fordi han opstod af graven som første fryden af opstandelsen.
As we're told in 1 Corinthians 15.
Som vi læser om det i 1. Korinther 15.
He rose from the dead on the day of the feast of first fruits.
Han opstod af graven på den dag, hvor man fejrede første fryden.
When the Israelites were commanded to begin counting for 7 weeks.
Den dag, hvor israelitterne havde fået besked på at begynde at tælle.
And it was only a few more days from the 40th day.
Og kun nogle få dage efter den 40. dag.
Until the 50th day, the day of Pentecost, that the Holy Spirit descends on the believers. And so, please notice the order in which these festivals occurred.
Læg mærke til rækkefølgen af, hvordan de fester her kommer.
Jesus died as the Passover lamb.
Jesus døde som påskelammet.
He was the unleavened, sinless sacrifice.
Han var det usyrede, syndfrie offer.
The first fruits of the resurrection.
Først brøden af opstandelsen.
His Holy Spirit comes on the day of Pentecost.
Helligånden kom på pinsedagen.
And all of these relate to Jesus' first advent or first coming.
Alt det her, det har med Jesu første komme at gøre.
And on that basis, I would like to suggest to you that the Feast of Israel and the calendar that God gave them.
Derfor vil jeg foreslå, at den Gud kalender, Gud har givet israelitterne.
That they also tell us what to expect for the future.
At den også fortæller os, hvad vi kan vente i fremtiden.
Related to Jesus' second coming.
Og med Jesu andet komme at gøre.
What are we waiting to hear as believers?
Hvad er det, vi venter på at høre, vi troende?
We're waiting to hear the trumpet sound of God.
Vi venter på at høre Guds trompet.
At which point he will gather together those who are his.
Når han vil samle dem sammen, som er hans.
And people will be evaluated on the basis of whether or not they have his atonement.
Og folk skal dømmes alt efter, om de har taget imod hans forsoning og gør eller ej.
And those who do, with them he will tabernacle together in the new Jerusalem, the holy city.
Og dem der har, dem vil han bo sammen med i Jerusalem, i den nye by.
Coming down out of heaven from God, as we're told in Revelation 21.
Når han kommer ned fra himlen, sådan som vi læser om det i åbenbaring 29.
So I'd suggest that when we try to ask the question, what can Israel teach Christian believers today?
Så jeg vil foreslå, at når vi stiller de her spørgsmål, hvad kristne kan lære af Israel i dag?
We should attempt to bridge the gaps.
Så skal vi prøve at slå bro over de her kløfter.
Of Israel's history.
Om Israels historie.
Of Israel's language, so that we can read the Bible accurately.
Om deres sprog, så vi kan læse Bibelen nøjagtigt.
Of its culture and its geography.
Og kultur og geografi.
And as we do, we'll have a better understanding of the scripture.
Og mens vi gør det, så vil vi forstå skrifterne bedre.